25 years ago, during a podcasting incident, Matt Apodaca was ejected from the studio and spent 25 years drifting through space. As everybody else aged, he remained ageless until his body was discovered by a salvage rig and brought back to Earth, where he rejoins the podcast on today's episode.
Hey, hello, everyone. I guess, well, I haven't seen you guys in so long. Oh my God.
Good to have you back, Matt.
I aged so fast.
How old are you? Can I ask how long it's been 25 years?
It's been 25 years.
We're old.
We're old now.
We're very old.
We're old now.
We're old.
We're old.
I guess old. You guys are saying this, but I... Not to be rude, but I'm not seeing much of a difference here.
What are you talking about? My skin comes off like paper.
I guess for me, what I'm having a hard time with is contextually, I've always been the young one.
You son of a bitch! I knew it! I knew that's where you...
Of course, that's the card you play.
You can't fucking tell the difference between us now and 25 years ago because we've always been old to you!
That's on you.
That's you're absolutely right. We're old.
And
you keep saying that, and that's honestly helpful to me. And because yes. In these situations when I can't tell, I need to know when somebody is old and when they're not.
We're playing classics like Cyberpunk 2077
again,
which takes place today. It's the future.
It's the future.
Would you like to know some things about the future, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, has anything from our vision of the future from the year 2021 come true? Like, do we get cybernetic enhancements or anything like
that? No. Your food is in a marble, and you get it from the government.
All food? And what is it? It's just food?
Yeah, it's in a marble. You get a bag of marbles at the beginning of the day at the post office, and you eat the marbles over the course of the day.
Yeah.
We our podcast no longer is on phones or computers. It's on marbles. You go to the post office, and you buy a marble of a new episode, and you put it in directly into your ear, and then afterwards you can eat it.
So we've gone, we had good technology. We had like real food. We had other media. We've adopted a marble-based society now is what I'm understanding.
Marble-based.
It's all marbles.
So if you, let's say you want to go somewhere.
Yeah.
You climb into a marble.
Climb into one.
Yeah, everybody's got a marble the size of like a, what did you call them? Car. You call
you
cars
forgot the
back
word
in the
for
day.
Car?
I hopped in a marble the other day with M. Night Shyamalan, and we went to a beach. Had the best time.
So within the 25 years I've been gone, you befriended M. Night Shyamalan and go on excursions with him?
Heather and I go to the beach with M. Night all the time.
This is the thing I'm upset about the most. I missed out on hangs with M. Night.
It's like a hidden beach, and it's got a secret to it. We go there a lot.
Oh, so that explains why you're this way.
We're old, you see.
No. It's only been... You've only been asleep for 3 days, Matt. We're lying.
Okay, see, I knew it.
We infiltrate an interstellar organ trading ring and read a Bible's worth of text in horny cyberpunk graphic adventure Police Knots as Hideo Kojima begins this week on How Did This Get Played? Welcome to How Did This Get Played, the show where we discuss the worst and weirdest and wake me up before you go-go-est video games of all time. That third W is by @KupowChicken. Submit yours at GetPlayedPod, #WWW. I'm Nick Weiger along with Heather Ann Campbell.
Wait, I thought we were doing names. I thought we were doing
Oh,
all
are we?
Last month, I forgot.
Okay.
And this, I mean, I'll do a name.
All right, great. You want to take it again?
No.
Okay, well, then we're just going to keep going. Are you going to do a name?
Yeah, I'm going to do a name.
I thought we were like, well, maybe do a name, but it'll be too much work, so we bailed on it. But we are doing names.
We talked about how it would be too much work, and then we all came up with like 50.
That's true. I should look up one of the ones I texted. Hold on. All right, go on, Heather.
All right. I'm Deather Strand Campbell. Silence.
Good.
I mean, not that I could hear like the room either way, but
no,
like
the crowd's
just
going nuts.
No, I liked it. No, God. I think we were just waiting for you to say to introduce along with my co-host
Metal Gear Padaka.
Hey. Right. Nick, you want to give one too?
Yeah, Matt had a good pitch. Weig Hardman.
Yeah. Weig Hardman. Deather's Strand Campbell and Metal Gear Apodaca. Wait, what was yours?
Yeah, Metal Gear Apodaca, but I didn't say my catchphrase, which is hello, everyone. Like, you know, a snake doesn't ever know what anything is.
Yeah, right.
Hello. Oh, man. If this is your first episode of the show, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know what'll clarify it? Welcome back, Bucket.
Edge. Yeah, we're normally inscrutable, but we're extra inscrutable this week, appropriately enough, because we are beginning Hideo Kojember, a month-long exploration of the games of Hideo Kojima, and he's a guy who's famously dense, has a lot of lore. There's so much that you have to digest and maybe comprehend, and maybe you just have no like play through a whole game and still not be clear on what the fuck is going on. That is the Kojima experience, and it's very much the case with this week's game.
If this podcast was a Hideo Kojima production, when Nick started talking, there could have been like a pop up, and you could have clicked it, and it would have been an audio description that was like, Nick Weiger is one of three hosts of the podcast How Did This Get Played, and every month they do a retrospective on the games of Hideo Kojima, and then you'd click on Weiger, and it would be like a family history of the name Weiger.
Yes, and then there would be just like a 3D model of like the Velociraptor from Jurassic Park that you could just like rotate for some reason. he's a fascinating figure, and he's made some fascinating games, including the game we're going to discuss this week. But before we do that, before we descend into gaming hell, it is first time to briefly touch on a game we're currently playing by spending 70 seconds in gaming heaven. Matt, tell me when.
Go for it, Nick.
So, as we discussed before recording, I had my first plane flight of any length in a while. I flew to New York City and back, and I got myself a plane game.
Mm-hmm. That didn't game get is off the plane.
Yeah.
Just stayed.
Baby steps. I wanted to experience air travel again. And then I'll work my way up to getting off of the plane in a different city.
You were on a list before, but now you're on a different list for doing that, right?
Yeah, this guy's just weird. Dungeon Encounters, which I got for Switch. Now, this is a dork game. Like, this is so fucking dorky. I sent you guys a link for so you can look at some of the art in this game and get a sense of what it's like to look at. And playing it is just like, you know, it's like it looks. The map is a grid of these dungeons you're going through. The various encounters, the titular encounters you can have are denoted by numbers that are on the map. And the only real art is like your player characters who are in your party, your JRPG party, and then the enemies that you're fighting against. It's very, very intentionally minimalist. It's an aesthetic choice. And it was directed by Hiroyuki Ito.
Time's up.
Who directed, let me add just a little bit more context, directed Final Fantasy VI, IX, and XII, and created the active time battle system. So this is a dude who's had a ton of success and been enormously influential in JRPGs. And then goes on to make this small, weird, like almost indie feeling game. It's like, it's kind of like a Steven Soderbergh, like how he'll like have made these huge like blockbusters. And then he's just like, now I just want to make a movie that I, with a phone, and you can only watch it on your phone. You know, like it's just some weird, like fucking experimental shit. But I love it so much. It's so good. And I don't know if you guys would like it at all. You might hate it.
Yeah. I'm looking at the link that you sent. And yeah. I'm seeing this grid, and I've played Dungeons and Dragons, so I'm not unfamiliar with something looking like this, right?
Sure.
But it looks like somebody put an action figure on top of a Scrabble board.
Yeah.
Like
it is very much that, yeah.
Yeah.
The thing that is exciting to me, and it's just in this screenshot here on the eShop, but I'm for some reason the levels like the levels that are featured in this screenshot, like the characters levels is getting me hyped as hell for some reason. Like the idea of
that you can level a guy that far.
Yeah, I guess so. But then also like seeing this creature that's like it's called Waking Eyes, and it's just a bunch of eyes level 74. And I'm like, yeah, let's fucking go. Yes.
Matt, you'll also like this, that you can get a cat man in your party, Elva, or a cat creature.
Yeah, I'm going to get
one of my party members
today.
Yeah. I think it's great, but it's dorky as hell. And it's you were speaking of inscrutable. This is intentionally inscrutable. But, you know, check it out. If you really, really love the combat systems of JRPGs, that's all it is. It's completely drilled down on that. Man, I went so far over 70 seconds.
Well,
what a format breach, but I couldn't resist.
Heather and I did interrupt you with two very hilarious jokes. So we, you know, we'll allow it.
Let's get into Police Knots.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Should we? All right.
I think we gotta.
All right. Well, let's set the stage. Police Knots is a graphic adventure game or visual novel developed and published by Konami. It was written and directed by Hideo Kojima. And originally released for a computer machine I've never heard of, the PC-9821, and then also released for 3DO, PlayStation, and the Sega Saturn. It has never been released in the West, so the only way that you can play it is via a fan translation. The game came out in 1994, and other video games from that year include Donkey Kong Country, Doom 2, Earthbound, Final Fantasy VI, Sonic the Hedgehog 3, and Sonic and Knuckles. Mm. So you put this game in the context of other games that were coming out at this time. What, huh?
Seriously?
I said, and me, famously born in 1990.
Wait, no, this
the year was 1994.
Oh, never mind. No,
I thought you were even younger than I thought.
I was like,
phew. My God.
No, I got scared for a second too.
You're born after Jurassic Park?
Yeah, no.
Fucking freak.
Shouldn't be allowed, honestly.
So if you put this in the context of other games from that time, it is unique. It is like playing a movie, which is an expansion of the sort of video game aesthetic and programming philosophy of Snatcher, a game for the Sega CD that we played last year. However, Police Knots is, I would argue, far less interactive than Snatcher and is more akin to reading a book over many, many, many hours with some visual scenes added.
That's where I think
we should begin. Oh, no.
I fully agree with you. And I will say that I was so hyped to play this game.
Me too.
Snatcher so much.
Holy
It's a fucking one of the best adventure games I've ever played. And I love adventure games.
100%.
Great story. Great characters.
Snatcher.
And I was so fucking hyped for Police Knots because I knew that this was the follow-up. I feel like this will be the iteration. This is on newer hardware. This is going to be... The art looks fucking awesome in this game.
Mm-hmm. That's fucking right.
And then to play it, I just felt like it was such a slog.
I just
got so bogged down in minutia so quickly.
Yeah, I thought we were opening up Kojember with a home run.
Yeah. Yes.
A home run so big that we were like, fuck yeah, we're going to start with Police Knots. Then we'll go a little indie with Bucktie. You know, like, well, not indie in that it was an indie game, but like nobody talked about Bucktie.
Yeah.
Right? Yes.
That sort of indie feel to it.
Fuck. fucking shit.
Now.
This game. Oh, no.
People, there might be some listeners who like to click on everything that they see, and that's it. So that, you know, they maybe it's that might be somebody here's thing.
Sure. And I will say honestly, and Matt, I do want to hear your take and your initial reactions to this. But I will say honestly, like if I had been playing this game under different circumstances, mm-hmm. and because, you know, we've always kind of got a little bit of time pressure to play through this game. We actually gave ourselves a little extra time so we could get, you know, really spend some time with Police Knots. But because I was like, oh, I have this looming deadline. I have to get through as much of this game as I can. Yeah. Just the volume of text you have to absorb to progress at all. And like you mentioned earlier, you were texting us, Heather. This is a thing it shares in common with Snatcher, which is that the look feature, you can look multiple times at the same object and they will get even more detail. And sometimes that's necessary in order to observe something that you need to advance the gameplay. So it to me honestly felt very tedious at times. I don't know, Matt, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, famously, who knows? You guys know, everybody yes. here knows that like adventure games are just not my thing. And I don't.
However,
really,
you also think that space is better than old.
That
this game
is
takes place
true.
In space. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that to me, but it takes place in the year 2013, a year that I've lived. So like. Do you know what I mean? So like, it's not like it's you know, retrofuturism at this point, but like,
sure.
it has a cool aesthetic. It has that going for it. But I don't even really remember what I gave Snatcher at the time last year. I remember thinking it was very cool. But yeah, definitely compared to this, it's a little less. To what Heather said, a little less interactive, but it's interactive in a different way where, you know, we have mentioned already, you can click on every single thing and get information anytime you want. And I think that's something that we'll probably be running into this whole month. And it's just a thing that I think we all know about Hideo Kojima is that this dude loves information. He's
yes.
fucking crazy for it. And he wants you to know every single thing that he's ever thought, and it's like it's interesting. I don't know. I this game's not uninteresting to me.
No, it's not uninteresting.
Yeah.
I think in this format, with a lot of voiceless text, he really did not have to edit himself at all.
Yeah.
And so there's just volumes of information on absolutely everything. Just talking about the timeline of his games real quick. So in 1987, he makes Metal Gear. 1988, Snatcher. Mm-hmm. Snatcher doesn't release on Sega CD, which is the version we played until 1994 in the US. So the year that Police Knots finally comes out. But so there's like 6 years of time between Snatcher and Police Knots, you know, like, and so it's like, it's a pretty substantial window there, even though they kind of feel right one right after the other. He also made Metal Gear 2 Solid Snake in 1990, which is the game that really kind of defined the franchise. But it's interesting to think, like, he could have gone in a direction of being like, I'm going to be the point and click, the interactive movie sort of, you know, version yeah. of like there's a version of his career where he goes fully in that direction. And I'm glad he went back to, you know, making games with systems and extensive gameplay with Metal Gear Solid in 98. Cause it's just like, that's some of his most interesting stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this is an interactive visual dictionary. It's not it's not even a visual novel. It's a visual dictionary with almost no puzzles to solve. It's essentially a picture book of ideas that Kojima and his staff had, you know, whether that be about futuristic drug delivery systems or space travel or even the way the news is broadcast and how makeup is applied to news anchors in the future. Like every
yes.
single fucking thing in this game, when we say you click on something and you look at it, you get information about what you're looking at. But then you also have, at least in the Saturn version, I don't know which versions you guys played, in the Saturn
the
version.
Yeah. Same as I played it on my PSP, though.
Yeah.
In the Saturn version, you also have a constant pocket dictionary. So anytime a term is used for the first time, whether that be DDS or whether it be Beyond, the name of the space colony where most of the action takes place.
Yeah.
Right. You get like a little asterisk next to the information, and then you can look that up in your pocket dictionary, and it explains like the history of that thing. So it's like reading a fake internet almost. Mm-hmm. Like it's like reading a fake Wikipedia with pictures at the top of the screen, you know, which is interesting, but a real grind.
Yeah.
It's for a game that's basically like, you know, you're it's essentially a first person adventure for most of it. It actually does like feel more like a Hypnospace Outlaw, which is exactly what you were talking about. It's just like, this is this fake internet that we're going to explore, and I'm going to read a bunch of text to get a bunch of context for this world that I'm inhabiting. And like what you're saying about just like having so much detail, it's just like amazing. It's just like, hey, yeah, let's get on the elevator. So, you know, this isn't a normal elevator. This is a superconductor elevator, which means it actually accelerates at a much higher rate than a normal elevator. And then all of a sudden you're listening to this dude give you like six paragraphs about how this future elevator works. Like, you know, and it's like, okay, yeah, this is, I don't know. It's just basically all world building, which is interesting. I could see someone just absolutely like loving this shit and eating it up with a fucking spoon, but it's just a lot to digest.
I feel like we should talk about or just set like the stage of the story so that understand what we're talking about.
Yes.
So to back up a little bit, in the year 2013, a group of five astronaut police officers or police knots are chosen to train in space for a future job protecting Beyond Coast, which is going to be the first functional self-supporting space colony. The colony, by the way, based on the designs of Gundam. So shout out to my favorite new thing in the whole fucking world. an accident happens and your main character, Jonathan Ingram, is ejected into space, seemingly to his death. But his spacesuit preserves him cryogenically for 25 years in space until he is picked up by salvage or something and then brought back to Earth.
Yes.
With no job and no family. He becomes a private investigator in old Los Angeles when the plot of the game begins. His ex-wife, Lorraine, shows up like a femme fatale at the door. And she has recently lost her husband. He's gone missing. And she doesn't know who else to turn to other than Jonathan Ingram. So he goes to Beyond after witnessing her car explode.
Yes.
And then he's got to investigate the circumstances of Lorraine's husband. What's his name? Hojo. What's his first name?
Kenzo Hojo.
And he's only got three clues to go by. A torn fig leaf, a set of capsules, and the word Play-Doh. Or maybe it wasn't a fig leaf. I don't remember. Anyway.
Yeah. It's a, so you described a lot, the cryogenically frozen you mentioned, and which means he hasn't aged. So his wife comes in and it's like, he's, you know, he's seeing her as an older woman. Although honestly, she looks the same age as him in the game art. But it's, so there's all sorts of stuff like that. And that leads to, when he gets to outer heaven, he's reuniting with his partner. I'm sorry, I said outer heaven because I have that in my head. It's another Hideo Kojima thing. Mm-hmm. When he gets to Beyond Coast, rather, I saw Heather, like I said, outer heaven. And I saw Heather, like her eyes, like turned into fucking saucers. Like,
well, I was
what,
like,
what game did you play?
The fuck did I miss going to outer heaven? I don't remember this at all. Oh no.
Beyond Coast is the space colony. So he, when he gets there, he's teaming up with his old partner, who is one of the police knots. And this, I think, is like a big thing of this game, which is, Hideo Kojima is like, he doesn't just wear his references on his sleeve. He like his influences on his sleeve. He like wears them like a NASCAR racing suit. It's just, if he likes something, he just puts exactly that in the game.
Yeah.
And so much of this game is like, he was like, I like Lethal Weapon. Let's do Lethal Weapon in space. And you hear that, mm-hmm. and it's like, sure, that's a great pitch. Lethal Weapon in space. And he's like, okay, great. So there will be one cop who's like young and has long hair, exactly like Mel Gibson's. And then he's got, and he's white, and his partner is black and older and has a mustache and a receding hairline and a family, of course.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the young guy's wife is dead. It's just like exactly
Oh,
the fucking Lethal Weapon.
And you know what else I like? I like Die Hard. So yes. Why don't I make that guy's backstory that he shot somebody a while ago and it was an accident and he can't pull the trigger because it reminds him too much of this accident from his past. I like Die Hard.
Yeah. It's the exact same fucking thing. He just merged the two things and they're in there and it's right down to the music, which is just like straight up out of the Lethal Weapon score. Matt, can we play this cue for what plays when you reconnect with Ed Brown, your old partner? It's like the royalty-free sound-alike for the Lethal Weapon soundtrack. It's like that's what the synth sax that's just completely trying to mimic that feeling that is evoke what's in the film.
Now, you've chosen a pretty sparse piece of music from this game. But among the complaints that I have to levy at this game, the soundtrack is not one of them.
No, I love the soundtrack.
Years of playing City Pop playlists on YouTube to Jonathan Ingram's face, which seems to be the chosen backdrop for all playlists. Like, I was like, oh man, the music really lives up to this atmosphere, this feeling that like it's the number one good vibe about the game is the soundtrack. So I've got a music cue from the beginning of the game where I was like, oh, before I'd been betrayed by the sheer tonnage of words in the title itself. Like, I was like, oh, here we go. This is gonna be a fucking smooth feeling all the way. It's 1994. You're just racing at top speed down the 101 freeway. Didn't even bother to wear a helmet so you could smoke a cigarette at 95 miles an hour. You don't got a care in the world. You got 15 lines of coke in a bag in your pocket.
In the lines?
In the lines. I don't know anything about drugs.
But me neither. Like, but let's do some.
Yeah. You show up at the club and you know the bouncer. You give each other the nod. And then you're inside. There's dancers everywhere. Why are they dancing? There's no music. Only the sound of how cool you are.
Yeah, it's really good. And I think the other track that You hear a lot in, that people really, really responded to in this one is the other one I pulled, End of the Dark, which I think is just a fucking jam.
Ooh, we pulled the same one.
Look, if this came on in the club now, it would be great, right?
Yeah.
That's what people in the club want.
Look, aesthetically, this game is a marvel. I love the art. I love the character designs. The sound design and the scoring is, I think, really, really awesome. It's just that the actually playing it is, for me anyway, under these circumstances, less fun than I'd hoped, especially considering how much I love Snatcher, which is such a similar design. Mm-hmm.
And we haven't even gotten to the parts that really bothered me. Should we get into that? So there's not a lot of interactivity in this game, you know, beyond clicking like a book in the corner and finding out the history of some shit that's never happened. There's nothing really to do except sexually assault women. Mm-hmm. And not just a woman, every woman in the game.
Yeah.
You can and I don't, you don't have to, you don't, it's not that you must, but when there's nothing else to do in a game, except grope women and their boobs animate to a bouncing sound. That's rough territory. And there's no punishment for it. It doesn't derail the plot. And in fact, services to contextualize your character who is constantly being called a pervert by other people in the game.
Yes.
So like, it wouldn't make as much sense if he wasn't just grabbing the tits of the first woman. I think maybe maybe the only person he can't grab the boobs of is his wife. His ex-wife.
Yeah.
They're,
it's because she most blows of the, up.
She's punished as a result.
Yeah.
It's most of the female NPCs in the game. I'm not sure if it's every single one, but like,
Wait. Name one. I think maybe
there's the older woman in the store with the bomb in the designer bag.
You can grope her. Definitely can grope her, and leads to a special ending. So you're rewarded for groping that one.
Oh my god.
Wow.
And then there's the woman who is on the police force.
Meryl.
Yeah, Meryl. Who
Meryl Silverberg, a same character name as in the Metal Gear Solid series.
Who you can only touch her breasts if you get a high score in the shooting gallery. If you get 250 points, I think. I only got 248.
played it for hours. Yeah.
That's what you do. She tells you, it's like, oh, if you go get 250 points at least in the shooting gallery, you can touch him.
Yes.
And that's just like a thing you can do, which is like,
yeah, her line is, you want to touch these, you got to beat me, while she's holding a switchblade.
Yeah. So she's the only one that allows you to, I guess, but it's still weird.
There's also his in-game dialogue is not like incongruous to this. Like he meets women and he's like, I think it literally at one point he's like, that's a beautiful ass. I could eat anything off that ass.
Yeah. He's
and then he says it to a different person. Yeah. He's like, that's a beautiful ass. Where's a quarter when you need one? And yeah, these are fan translations, but they didn't add this shit to the game.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like a pretty rigidly as correct as possible, as true to the original text as the localization could be, because it seems like it's that's just what he wanted in there. And there's all sorts of information there's all sorts of background to indicate that yes, this is very much the game that Kojima wanted to make, and this was very much a feature he thought was important.
You know, you meet your partner's daughter at his home.
Yes.
And in front of him.
She's 16.
She's 16. She's in a gymnasium uniform because she's like got some routine or something she's working on.
She also explains it's a high tech. She gives you a bunch of context of how high tech the suit is and how it wicks the sweat or whatever.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
You say in front of your partner to his daughter, I'm more interested in what's under that uniform.
Yes.
Like, if that was any human being to another, like, you'd get the shit beaten out of you.
Like, right, leave my home. What the fuck is the matter with you? That's my daughter.
Yeah, it's like shrug off
25 years. Yeah, you meet her. This is the first thing you say.
They should have a justification for it. Like, yeah, when you're frozen for 25 years, it ruins your brain and you become a not normal man.
There's to go back to your I just want to get before we leave this area. When you touch the old lady's boob. So there's a hostage situation. There's a hidden bomb. You run into a purse store and the bomb is hidden inside of one of these purses. If you just go for the woman's boobs, they bounce and they blow up the building. Because you learn, and that then affects later dialogue. Because over the game over screen, Ed, your partner, says, dude, what the fuck are you doing, man? Like, we're trying to disarm a bomb and you grab, what's wrong with you? You do it again and blow up the building. He has different dialogue. And it's like, dude, you got to stop. You're killing us over and over again.
Yeah.
Then when you are disarming the bomb, you find a motion sensor. And Ed is like, oh, that must have been why we died, because her boobs jiggling set off the motion sensor inside of the bag.
Man, I got to replay the sequence. I will say I do like that this game has the fourth wall breaking, you know, where like especially in that sequence, because like if you fail in that sequence, it'll be like, OK, let's pretend that never happened. You know, like they're acknowledging the game reality within their reality, which I think is fun. Yes, Ed Brown, his partner, whose daughter he ogles verbally, describes him as he's the biggest pervert I've ever met in my life. Like, it's just like this is like this character's core value is that he's like a fucking disgusting horn dog.
Yeah.
So talking about this a little bit more, because
which is also. Before I forget, the opening that I pitched to you guys that we didn't end up doing.
Oh, yeah.
Which was that Matt and I were two detectives, and Matt kept trying, like, Nick's a suspect or a witness. Yeah. And instead of getting the witness to give us information, Matt just keeps being like, hey, can you jump up and down, buddy? And you're boing, boing, boing. It's like, what are you looking at his dick? Yeah. Let's see it again.
It does make you wonder if Kojima has ever talked to a woman. Like, it's so fucking weird. It's so bizarre. And that just everyone's just basically kind of takes it in stride. It's so weird. This game actually has a credited breast bouncing supervisor, Kumi Sato. And I don't know if that's a joke or not, but it's in the game's credits.
That's like a t-shirt that you buy at the pier.
I'm a breast bouncing supervisor. My friend over here is on the Beaver Patrol.
I mean, he talks about his kid in his book, The Creative Gene. So I know that he's either kidnapped a child or has a relationship with a woman. I guess that's a incredibly heteronormative thing to think.
Yeah.
Like, I guess he could just.
Yeah, Heather.
I don't know anything. Yeah. He's got a kid.
Maybe he shot someone and then that person's kid was there and then he adopted him. Like this game. Yeah. I do want to say a couple of one more thing on this, which is there's a video, and we can post this video on social media, because I think it's like a really good breakdown of just what this game is, or what this aspect of the game is, and how prominent it is. But I've got a little chunk that I pulled. This is from the Censored Gaming channel, and this is specifically about Police Knots. And this is about the Kojima's interactions with Sony for the PlayStation port of this game, and why it got censored versus the Saturn port.
It was with the PS1 release where Hideo's vision started to meet resistance, as revealed in Famitsu's PlayStation 20th anniversary interview with Kojima, and translated by, again, the folks at Junker HQ. Hideo and the Sony president got into an intense dispute over the title's breast touching, which forced them to tone the feature down. Hideo was, needless to say, not pleased.
So that gives you some context for, like, this was an actual fight. And the quote that's pulled, this is from Junker HQ, is Sony said, "We're going to need to decide on a limit to the breast touching." And Kojima says, from the transcript, "Oh, give me a break."
Well, I mean, this is the same man who was like, the first place you go outside of the detective agency is during the chase sequence of the man who you believe has just murdered your ex-wife. Mm-hmm. And you can click on the buildings across the street, and one of them sells... it's VR child pornography.
Oh, yeah.
Which, that's an insane thing. Like, the first... I mean, yeah, you're like, oh, I'm going to make this world gritty.
Sure.
That's like... That's beyond fucked... Yes. As your intro to the gaming world, like, it's there. Whoa.
But okay. Let me just say this, and not to defend that, but I would just say in the context of if we're going to
cut the podcast right here. Just
folks, we got him.
just smash through my window. I was going to say that if you're trying to present a cyberpunk dystopia,
yeah,
and you're going to say, like, this world is just this fucked up that that happens, I don't know, maybe that's still a line you don't want to cross, but it, when you try to marry that with the casual groping just throughout this game, it starts to be like, wait, what the fuck are you trying to say here?
Yes.
This is just upsetting.
That's what I was trying to say, was that, like, you can't, the both of those things are in the same game, where it's like, how this is judgment of a world gone wrong. Now, why don't you sexualize my 16-year-old daughter? Like,
it's, or your also, dead wife's daughter.
Yeah.
Another character is very sexualized.
Look, we got to spoil. We got to spoil. Yeah. Can we spoil?
Yes,
look,
please.
We're entering spoiler country. So here it is.
Is that how we do it here, Heather?
Buckle up. It's spoiler country.
There it is. All right. All right. Great. Is that as far as you're going? Are you guys going to go for a little bit?
Stash your hats and glasses, buckaroos. We're going into spoiler country. You might get spoiled.
I found a corpse out on the desert. It had gone dry and eyes were pecked out from vultures. I guess you could call that body spoiled.
Does that work? Did I do
that
it?
That was wonderful.
Yeah, that was great.
Spoiler country. So, your ex-wife's daughter is your daughter. But the game still allows you to grab her tits and maybe her vagina.
Yeah.
Also at one point, I believe she gets on top of you and it's like, I love you.
She and really like, try and she yeah. almost she tries to have sex with you and you're interrupted by a phone call.
Yeah.
Like that's the only instance in which the protagonist Jonathan Ingram exercises any restraint throughout the game.
Yes, absolutely. But and there are so many of these instances, I feel like we should just re-clarify. These aren't the only things you can do in the game. Like there's other stuff.
There's other stuff going on.
But it is a part of it.
You're like on spaceships and shit.
Yeah.
Like there's like a lot happens in this. There's shooting sequences. There's fucking, you know, there's mechs. It's a wild there's an organ smuggling ring. There's future drugs. There's so much going on. There's so much world building.
They're straight up,
but it is
animated.
A little overwhelmed. They're straight up. Yeah, there's great animated sequences, and and there's zero G clubs to hang out in. But within those zero G clubs, there are buxom women that you can fondle.
I think that's why we've spent so much of this podcast talking about this is it's jarring. It's not like. I'm sure there's some lewd shit said during Snatcher that I don't really remember.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, I've seen screenshots of Quiet from Metal Gear Solid, whatever that one was. Five?
Five. Yeah.
Five. And it's like, okay, I get that there's like, you know, fucking F1 car bikini babes in a lot of his stuff. It's just intrusive in this game.
Yeah.
Like it is in your face, unavoidable. You meet a girl behind a counter and she's wearing like a shirt with a boob window cut out. And your character's like, oh, whoa, what the job?
Yeah,
the
tongue rolls out. Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, whoa.
This also on top of some of the other things in this game that have aged incredibly poorly, like, you know, obviously blatant sexism. There's racism in the game. There's transphobia in this game. There's stuff in this game that just do not age bad immediately. Like,
sure.
But, you know, especially playing it today, there's just so much. There's a lot of stuff in this game that made you just go, yikes.
Yeah, but those other elements, a lot of content that was produced in the 90s are
100%. Yeah.
There aren't a lot where you're just going around straight up just honking on boobs and the woman just says, "Hey, I didn't say you could do that."
Yeah, I'm going to ask you again to not do that. And then do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me remind you, there will be no consequences if you repeatedly do this.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's fucking weird. He never stopped. You're right, Heather. He never stopped being horny. But it's just this game. It's like I never want to, like, it's one of those things where you hear about, like, a censorship debate, like a struggle with, like, a studio or something like that. You always want to side on with the artists, except this is one of those ones where you're just like, nah, Sony was right.
And yeah, honestly, they should have.
honestly, they should have gone further with it. I don't know, man.
Yeah,
it's
I would have loved. I would have loved to have heard his argument if Sony was like, "But the daughter, you'll cut that he grabs his daughter's boobies."
Yeah,
and I would have loved to hear Kojima be like, "Absolutely not."
Yeah,
I need that in the game.
I'll fucking walk.
Yeah,
there's so to sing a few more praises to this game with all this problematic content.
Sure.
There is this, as always, his sci-fi ideas are awesome. And that the game also pre-references, like it's a preamble to other concepts that he uses later.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There are, I mean, he's still using the same acronyms in Death Stranding, his most recent game, as he's using in 1994's Police Knots. Like DDS, which is said constantly in this game, which is a drug delivery system. The plot of the game sort of hinges on this idea that you could smuggle narcotics into the general populace by splitting the ingredients of those narcotics into multiple pills that would only become active once ingested. Cool concept. DDS returns as delivery dependence syndrome in Death Stranding because he loves winking to himself, and those original winks are usually winks to somebody else's work.
Yes. Tokugawa, which is the company that's in this game, Tokugawa Electronics, is referenced a lot in Metal Gear Solid, particularly Metal Gear Solid 2. And, you know, the I mentioned Meryl Silverberg, who's a character in Metal Gear Solid. It almost like it feels like it could be the same character with some, but I don't think that quite times out. But also says she was in Foxhound, which is the organization in the Metal Gear series,
right,
or one of the organizations in the Metal Gear series. So, you know, there's a lot of those self-references. I also liked a lot of the character designs. Like, I thought, like, it's just like, not necessarily the two leads, but like the chief looks cool as hell. Like the fucking, I mean, so many of the characters just look so stylish, and just the environments look really cool. The Dave character, who's kind of like Dave and Meryl are kind of a pair,
mm-hmm.
Who's like kind of like this cyberpunk Naruto who eats cheeseburgers like Wimpy, and he's just like a really cool looking character, and that them as a pairing is just really cool. And he has an amazing death scene. Again, spoiler alert, but his death scene is he says this. Hamburgers aren't my favorite thing in the world, you know. You, Meryl, I always love your smell.
Oh. Oh, well, I mean, he died, so I guess he'd be too angry at him. But what a shame if that was the way you left.
Yeah.
You shirked off your mortal coil with, I always love the way you smell.
And he's like, at least I could die happy.
Yeah. I do think, and this is a problem across anime in general, I do think that the art for Ed is beyond problematic.
Sure.
It's frustrating that a lot of anime only seems to know how to draw a black character one way, and that's mm-hmm. offensively.
Yeah.
But then again, this is also a game where, you know, every woman's boobies jiggle.
Yeah.
So I don't know where they're aiming. Who knows? I know where I'm aiming with the Sega Saturn gun.
Did you use the light gun for the gun sequences?
Fuck yeah, I did.
Wow.
I mean, that's got to plus it up quite a bit, because I didn't find that to be like the most engaging.
No.
Oh, it super plussed it up, except that those shooting sequences happen once every like 18 hours in this game.
Oh, shit. I put my light gun in my storage bin. Yeah. Hold on. Let me fetch it out. I didn't realize I'd need it again.
Imagine my joy knowing that this used the Sega Saturn light gun.
Yeah.
Plugging in that light gun and getting ready to go. You get a shooting sequence near immediately.
Very early on.
As you're outside of the detective agency, you're fucking shooting a dude with your light gun. It's like, oh, fuck, this is great. And then you might as well put it in plastic, sell it on eBay, and when you get to another portion where you need a light gun, buy another one.
Right.
Fuck. Although, wait, but I will say also, speaking of light gun, this game has one of the funniest light gun moments. I guess I've never looked for light gun comedy, but it's fucking awesome. When you are at the finale of the game raiding Tokugawa's headquarters, there's like five guys that line up in front of you and you pick them all off. Bam, 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 bam. Right?
Yeah.
And then almost a la Metal Gear Solid 2, suddenly there's a million guys on screen.
Yes.
All in different places, all over the room, like on balconies. Like, it's such a good joke.
Yeah.
And it also gives you a chance to like really let loose with a light gun. You don't really even have to aim. You're just kind of like, bam, 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 bam. Yeah. Well, lots of fun. Lots of fun. Once.
Yeah. There's fun to be had. You have to look past a lot. And I think I just had different, my expectations were set at a different level because of playing Snatcher going into this. And, but I don't know. Is it bad? Hmm. I don't know. I do want to say that you mentioned it was a fan localization, and this came out, the fan localization came out in 2009 originally. They finally localized or made it compatible with the Saturn version in 2016, which is like the definitive version. Junker HQ and PoliceKnots.net, like the volunteer team that put this together, like just, it's just because it's so much text and it's such dense lore and it's so much, like Heather was saying, invented vocabulary, that figuring out how to localize that is such a challenge. And a volunteer team just like fucking did that and made this game available to players who only know English, for the first time. Just it's just an incredible service that they did.
Also, I read that there are multiple engines inside of this game present on each disc. And that was part of the monumental translation challenge, was that you couldn't just patch this game. You had to modify it in order for it to work. The translation is a labor of love. And I think it's archival at points, because this is a figure who is like one of the names in video gaming, and the idea that this massive work of his would not be available in English is kind of kooky. And there's cool shit. There is cool shit in it. Like I said earlier, there's the way that Nick described getting into an elevator is like somebody's like, did you know? It's like fucking talking to the worst nerd at a party. And everybody on the planet is that nerd. But some of that shit is cool. Like Karen Hojo is like talking about how her makeup on the news is digital. Like it's applied. And this is 1994. And she's talking about Snapchat filters. Like she's talking about a concept that is then executed in our year of our Lord 2021. Like that's really neat. And he does that a lot in these games. But I don't know, man, if I was making a game and I was thinking about the future, maybe I'd Star Trek it up with a little bit less like boob grabbing.
Yeah.
A little bit more like we got rid of money. Like,
I feel like there are going to be some fans of this game who are going to be mad at us. But I don't know. It is like an overwhelming, it's overwhelming and it's to its detriment. And
If all that content was not in the game, would it make the game worse? And I say it would not.
Yes. No.
Therefore, it doesn't need to be there. And the game is perhaps made better without its inclusion. Like if this was just Blade Runner isn't Blade Runner because Harrison Ford's character is like honking Priss's boobies. It's Blade Runner because it takes itself grimly seriously.
Yes.
Now, you can include Kojima's sensibilities and his sense of humor and his fourth wall breaking and all that shit in a game where you don't literally make a girl jump up and down in front of you and go, whoa,
oh, oh no. Hey, man, that's my daughter.
Yeah, yeah, and it's like
more
I
like
mean,
my daughter now, am I right? Come on,
like, what?
God, you're disgusting, but I love you for
yeah.
it.
Yeah, you're my favorite pervert. Yeah, the stuff is in there and it's like, yeah, you know, we're not admonishing anybody for being horny, but we're like, no. We're like, this is like too much.
Hey, being horny is great.
Yeah, it rocks. But it's like this.
I mean, I wouldn't know, but
yeah, me neither.
Also, it's not. Look, if this was an arrow gay, like a full erotic game, then it would also be putting it into a different bucket, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. That bucket would be like, hey, in the context of these other games with these sensibilities, how does it hold up? Whereas this is not that kind of game.
No, the story
isn't that kind of story. So it's
that kind of,
I don't know. It's a bummer, man.
Yeah,
and
it's in conflict with itself.
I like violence and boobies and, you know, 80s action movie. I love all that shit a lot.
Yeah.
I don't like being taken out of a game and being reminded that I'm a woman. Like, mm-hmm. that's, you know, like,
right.
That's weird.
I'll also just say that even if all that stuff wasn't in there, I still think this is kind of a tedious gameplay experience. And mm-hmm. I do kind of feel like just the nature of it being so, having such, so much text to absorb and it like what we're saying, we've talked a lot about the you know, the boob touching, but that's not the only demerit for this game, at least playing it, you know, today. And honestly, like, I feel like it, for this format of this kind of adventure and this kind of story and even having a fucking unfrozen protagonist, it's just like Snatcher, which is the exact same, which is Snatcher's exact same conceit. Snatcher is just a more interesting version of this.
Yeah.
Also, the characters are better in Snatcher. There's not anyone who's like a Gillian Seed or a Metal Gear, your little assistant robot in Snatcher. Like, those are like cool interesting characters. There's no one who really has that same sort of connection within this game.
I miss the funny robot.
Yeah.
Was also, there was like, I feel like there was a phone number in Snatcher that if you called in real life, something happened. There were like these weird, crunchy, Kojima-ish things that I felt were either I didn't see because of the amount of work represented in this game. But I feel like there was like shit in these other games that was like a little bit more wild, right? Whereas this one feels like, I don't know.
I mean,
there's no like, take the controller out and plug it in another thing, or your map becomes video of a woman talking, or hey, if you call this number in real life, it'll actually be somebody on the other end of the phone, or here's a reference to a game I just made, and you're in a bar where everybody's talking about that video game and that company. Like, there's a bar in Snatcher where people are talking about other Konami properties.
Yeah.
And that feels like playful in a way that this one wasn't.
Yeah, there is a bar called the Solid Snake, but that's about as far as it goes.
Yeah.
Let's get to our final thoughts on Police Knots.
Final thoughts.
So we'll each say a positive thing about this game and give it a numerical decimal rating. You know, I will say, although this has been mostly negative, but I didn't hate this experience. I will say, I will confess, I ultimately bounced off of playing it, and which I was not expecting to do, and I watched a playthrough for the rest of it, because
mm-hmm.
It's just, I just found it tedious, and I was like, this is so much of this is not super interactive anyway. But I don't know. Maybe I'll return to it at some point. I feel like playing the PlayStation version I would have had more fun playing the Saturn version. But I guess I'll just go back to, I do feel like it's got some of that prescient futurism that Heather mentioned, and that's like, you know, hey, that's a thing he's known for, and that's a thing that there's elements of here, and I do feel like it's like it's got some interesting ideas. I just feel like overall it just kind of doesn't really come together. I'm trying to think of that because is this like a director with a very strong aesthetic, who's got like one like weird film, but that some people think is like still for some people it's their favorite. It's like almost like Tarantino's Hateful Eight. I don't know if that's the best example.
Yeah,
which is just like this is a film that like a lot of people are just like, oh, this is kind of, I don't know, but some people really like it. I feel like I could see this, maybe not the best example, but it's that kind of game. I feel like in Kojima's repertoire. So
yeah,
fuck,
that's interesting.
I'll give it a yeah. I don't know. How do I rate this thing? I guess I'll give it a 7. That feels about right. I don't know. Heather, what do you think?
Well, here's the thing, is that until this game, I hadn't played a bad Kojima game. Like I'd gone from Death Stranding into last year's Kojima, and I was like, man, this guy can't miss, right? And yeah. I think that when you become, when you have a parasocial relationship with a creator, mm-hmm. as everyone does with all creators, you hold them to a standard that even you couldn't live up to. And this game has tons of cool fucking shit in it. Tons of cool shit. And if I had 6 months to like click through this visual dictionary, I'd be like, fuck, this game is awesome. You know, I really loved. So my positive is kind of, it was sound like I'm negging the game, but it's a real, the character design is so good that I looked up the jacket that Jonathan Ingram wears. Cause I was like, you yes. gotta be able to buy this jacket, right? There's not a ton of options to buy that jacket, but I was like, this character looks so cool. I want to wear his clothes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
There is, when the game is atmospheric, it has awesome atmosphere. You just don't spend a lot of time in those places or linger in those locations. And I wish there was more of it. I wish I'd known what I had given games. I'm also giving this a 7, Nick. A 7. Matt wow. Apodaca, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, for an adventure game to, you know, be something that I actually really, really enjoy, it's got to be, I guess, I don't know, not this. Or, you know, something that's like really, really like out of this world, right? Like, I really liked What Remains of Edith Finch. That's a little different.
Sure.
But I really liked that thing. I think as a game, it has things in it that we obviously don't like. It has cool design. It has cool music. I think the story for the most part is pretty good. Like, I, you know, it is Lethal Weapon, you know, X Die Hard in space, but I think it's interesting enough. Like, it was interesting enough for me to like, yeah, get to a certain point and just be like, I'm not gonna finish this. There's just so much in it. But my favorite thing, you know, this is gonna sound silly, I guess, but I love the Police Knots logo. Like, the idea of that, like the astronaut Da Vinci pose is so cool to me that I guess it makes up for the whole thing. Not really, but like, but yeah, I like that. And yeah, this is not something that, I don't know, it's just not my favorite kind of thing. Anybody could have made, not anybody, but like, so I love Hideo Kojima's work. And like, if he can't make an adventure game that I absolutely love, I don't know if anybody really can. Like, so I, you know, I'll give it a, honestly, like a 6.5. These aren't my favorite, and that's, you know, a failing within me, probably. I don't know, but they're not usually my thing. This one didn't convert me, and yeah. My favorite thing was a logo.
These are my thing, and I absolutely adored Snatcher, as I've said a half dozen times, and I really wanted to like this game, and still did not have Yeah. So I 100% if you get someone from your perspective being like, eh, this just ain't for me.
Yeah.
But then there are people who fucking love this game. There are people who think this is like their favorite Kojima game. So, hey, maybe we're wrong.
Maybe we were wrong. We've got reviews that we've culled from the internet. And if we had a negative take on this game, these will be positive reviews. And if we had a positive take, these will be negative reviews. It's the segment that changes every week. Maybe we were wrong. And I've got a review from Kotaku in 2014 titled Nine Obscure Adventure Games We Wish Had Sequels by N. Ho Sang and Peter Tyrius. It goes like this. Police Knots. Hideo Kojima's Snatcher was a masterpiece. Police Knots took it a step further. Born of Kojima's dream to either be an astronaut or a murder case detective in Los Angeles if his dreams of being a director didn't pan out, Police Knots was science fiction at its best. After an accident in a space colony leaves Jonathan Ingram unconscious for 25 years, he wakes up to discover the world has gone on without him. Its flashes of Lethal Weapon-esque intrigue give way to the deep, metaphysical meanderings that make for the usual Kojima mind meld on top of fantastic production values and mesmerizing art. After a proper English port, we would love a proper sequel.
Yeah, I've got one along similar lines. This is a review of the 3DO version by Saturn Forever, and this was reviewed in 2004 on GameFAQs. Worth getting if you can still find it. I am very lucky to have found this game on an online store from Hong Kong. I played quite a bit, but I feel it was well worth it. Even though I cannot read or understand any Japanese at all, I really enjoyed this adventure. I had played Snatcher on my Sega CD a few months earlier, and I just had to get this game. Overall, a very excellent game. It would just be perfect if it were in English. The characters in the game are just so awesome. Adventures like Police Knots and Snatcher are too good to be left in Japanese. We need more people to be aware of these two excellent titles, so maybe down the road, Konami may bring them over. 10 out of 10. Konami never did. And that, honestly, that is a thing of just like, they should have fucking localized this game. They should localize it now. There should be a fucking, there should be a pack that has, and they'll never fucking do this, especially with the weirdness they have with Kojima. But like, there should be like, you should get Snatcher and Police Knots. They should both be translated and they should be emulated and playable on modern hardware. It sucks that you have to jump through so many fucking hoops to play these games, which are important parts of an important creator's like fucking, history. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know why I got so fired up there.
Dude, it's okay.
No, this is fucking bullshit.
Relax.
We're on a podcast where we talk about stuff. It's okay to talk a lot.
Yeah.
And angrily.
Yeah.
I have one more from vgeditorials.home.blog. So this is just somebody's WordPress, right? But it's an extensive review of Police Knots. And their takeaway is, when I got a Sega Saturn a few years ago, I picked up the Saturn version using the script from the PS1 version to help me play through the game, and I enjoyed it very much. The game has a ton of great ideas, very creative. The plot was solid, and it leaves you guessing the whole way through with a massive load of plot twists as well. The cast of characters were decent. Some were very likable, too, especially Jonathan, who has hilarious lines when it comes to the scenes with fan service. Speaking of the fan service, though there is a lot of it, it's actually tolerable. There isn't anything that's too excessive or oversaturated, like in modern HE animes like Rosario Plus Vampire, High School DxD, etc. Just some scenes where you make Jonathan touch some boobs or listen to Jonathan talk dirty about the women he encounters throughout the game. Moving on, and then the review just passes past it. And to that point, yeah, when you compare it to stuff that's worse, it really isn't. It's almost Naked Gun territory, just a little bit goofy. And if you reposition it like that in your brain, it's not as horrible. It's just shocking when you don't go into the game with that context. See, maybe I was wrong. I wasn't. Matt, what were you about to say?
This is not like necessarily like negative or positive, but it's something that I thought while I was playing it a little bit, that it was sort of an interesting point too. And then I read this article from Eurogamer by Simon Parkin, written in 2009. The adolescent is the perfect game hero. The journey that a player undertakes in learning and mastering a game system, advancing from novice to proficiency, exactly mirrors the transition from childhood to adulthood. What better candidate could there possibly be for the lead role in any video game? It's a point of view that Police Knots, with a cast almost entirely over the age of 45, contests. But then designer and producer Hideo Kojima has never been afraid to use maturity as a lens through which younger players can experience his games. Kojima's most recent creation, Metal Gear Solid 4, starred a man in his 40s with a premature aging disease that made him appear like a man in his 70s. Police Knots might be, first and foremost, a thriller, a detective story, with all the Miss Marple-style trappings you'd expect. But beneath the surface, it's a game about middle age. That, I guess I haven't played, games like are different now. You're going to play games with, like, older people and stuff, but like when I was a kid, all the games, you would assume all the characters are kids, right? You're not, I guess, but you're also not thinking about that canonically Mario is 27 years old or something like that. But like in other games that you're playing like, you know, Kingdom Hearts or something, or like Final Fantasy X. Everyone's like a teenager.
Certainly a lot of JRPGs. Yeah, it's a lot of teens that you're controlling. Yeah, this is a game, but it is specifically middle-aged men.
Yes.
Like it's like that's who you're dealing with. Like it doesn't extend to the female cast.
No, and I would hardly call how it's handled mature. Like just based on everything we've discussed thus far.
Yeah, when you consider the difference between Jonathan Ingram's behavior as a man and Pac-Man's behavior as a man.
Yes,
at least Pac-Man doesn't at any point grope Miss Pac-Man in the cutscenes. He just falls in love with her adult people would do. Although now I'm kind of fantasizing because there's baby Pac-Man the game and there's Miss Pac-Man, but Pac-Teen would be awesome if you were like using your mouth to harass people.
I don't want to eat a ghost, Dad.
Hey, that was maybe where, I don't know, man, I feel so weird about this. I feel like some people are gonna be mad, and then I also feel like it's like I feel like there's that maybe I am wrong. Maybe there's something I missed. There are people who've like written very lovingly about this game, but is part of that because of just how scarce and it like how hard it is to play? You know, does that color how people's perception of it, that it feels like a hidden gem?
Can I say something that might make you feel better?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No gamer has ever heard something that has made them upset. So I think, I think you're okay.
Well, so, okay, because I really wanted to love this.
Yeah.
Because I thought it would make me cooler. You know, like, when you find something that's obscure and it's like an album that nobody's heard or an anime that nobody's seen.
Yeah.
Liking it makes you feel like you've got a secret cool thing, you know? And oftentimes when you have that secret cool thing, the more secret it is, the more cool it feels.
Mm.
But I think that any relationship that a consumer has with art, like, for example, I've been a lifelong fan of Neon Genesis Evangelion, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that to love anything without reexamining it is a problem, because people evolve, the world evolves, things change, and your perspective on things changes. And there are parts of Evangelion now where I'm like, oh man, this stuff that I've loved for forever has a couple things in it now that I just don't think are great.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that my experiences with that thing in the past were wrong.
Right.
It just means that your experience of a thing shifts. So I would hope that if you are fucking furious at us right now for hating on a thing that we dedicate an entire month to.
Yes.
We love this dude so much that we don't do that for anybody else.
No.
Right.
Like, I would hope that this inspires you to at least, you know, maybe we're wrong, but also maybe a little bit more critical interaction with a thing like this is valuable, right?
Or yeah, I think that's extremely well said, Heather. And I think there's also a chance that maybe someone can acknowledge all of those flaws and still they can look past them enough, which it sounds like some of the people who love this game have done. I'm just like, yes, I acknowledge that these things are problems, but I still love it despite that.
The other thing I think at play here, this is across all media. This isn't just a thing with video games, but like media, any sort of media doesn't have the benefit that we have to grow with time, you know? So like, sure. This is like something, this was made, it came out in 1994, it was probably worked on for a few years before that, at a time where this was like a thing that people were like fine with. And obviously now it's not a thing that anybody, that some video game people might still condone, but it's not something we condone. We're not okay with. And it took us out of it. And I think that's okay. I think it's fine that it didn't jive with us 100% because of a icky thing in it that we did not care for.
And by the way, just to reiterate, and I think it's a good point, Matt, is just like, it's the icky thing is not the only issue I feel like we have. It's like also that it's just like, is not as fun to play as some other games of this genre.
Yeah. If I wanted to read a book, I'd read a book.
Uh-oh.
Well, that's really not what I was saying, but okay.
Can I say that just as a side note, anytime I play on my Saturn, I love it. And the game is so gorgeous on a CRT coming out of the old Saturn. Holy shit, is it beautiful. You're like, because also you don't see any of like compression artifacts or stuff because they're smoothed out by that old resolution and that glow. So like when the game started and it has like a archival footage of like the moon landing and shit in the opening credits, it just looks like video footage. It just looks like I'm watching, and I was like, whoa, oh man, this is awesome. So that's another plus for Police Knots, is like you play it on old hardware and you're like, man, 1994, if you put this in, you'd be like, ooh, this is a good looking game.
I get a fucking CRT. Has anyone done that? I feel like that could be a Kickstarter. Like, has anyone kickstarted, like, it's probably happened a dozen times, kickstarted like a modern CRT? Like, it's just like, it's like a new CRT that's got like a tube and that has like eight hookups, like eight sets of hookups on the back. So you can hook up all your old like fucking consoles and VCRs to it and shit.
I am of two minds of this. One is I'm positive somebody's done this. And the other is I bet nobody can do this. It feels like you need a factory in order to make these vacuum tubes at scale so that people aren't charged like $8,000 per television, right? But if there was any company to do it, I bet somebody like Analog would. Like, here's a reference quality CRT in order to play a game on.
So much old technology was so reliant on tubes.
Yeah.
We don't really deal with tubes anymore, do we? Yeah. This is something I'm working through right now in the moment.
There's radio tubes, tubes in your car in the fuse box.
Yeah.
The way my mom used to feed me.
Pneumatic tubes.
Pneumatic tube. She'd be upstairs. She'd fill the bank deposit box.
Yeah.
Or the bank deposit. Thump, and then it would be sent down into the hole, and I'd open it up, and on all fours, in my adult diaper, I'd scramble with the usually scrambled eggs. I'd be just eating scrambled eggs on all four.
Yeah,
it was great times.
Got it. Yeah,
thank you for sending it down here, mother, is what you would say.
Yeah, into the tube though. Like I'd have to like put my head sideways and kind of shout out, "Mom, thank you for the food."
But you had a Saturn as a kid, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
good.
It was. It was. I played it with a series of mirrors because they kept it on a different floor.
Hey, it's time for the question block.
Ba-ding!
All right, this one is from @unseriousplayer on Twitter, and they write, "Before he predicted internets of death and memes, Kojima made this picture of space travel. Do y'all think elements of space travel in Police Knots will come to be?"
Well, you've got like the salt tablets you take for rehydration.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like a You got like the zero G stewardesses. That's the thing that I think of. I don't know. I mean, like it's. I don't know enough about space travel to know how prescient this potentially could have been. I don't know. Yeah.
So it's taken us a long, 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 long time to get tourists into space.
Mm-hmm,
we're
right.
just now doing it, right? But I do think that a lot of the stuff he's saying at the end of the game about how unbearable being in space is for people,
right.
both physically and mentally, is one of the things that I've read about being a problem. Like,
yeah.
we can't just make a space elevator and like hang out up there. It's not good yes. for us.
And what is the syndrome in it? It's SAS, space adaptation syndrome, is it?
Yeah. Like I think that shit, I mean, I don't know that we're ever going to have a colony. We don't. All we had to do was wear masks, and we couldn't do that.
Yeah.
As a human race. Like, we're not gonna put shit up in space
yes.
and build a town up there when we don't even pave our roads. You know what I'm saying? We don't even pave our own roads as potholes up and down the fucking street. Velveeta ain't even cheese. I mean, come on, what are we talking about here? You know, what are we talking about?
This new format becomes way more popular. I will say that I think the things that are like you talked about the digital makeup anticipating Snapchat filters. The other thing, like the organ trade being such mm-hmm. like a big thing
yeah.
with you know, life extension, and that being so, you know, such a big thing of like rich people are hoarding organs, I could see happening. I also think like the you know, it like different colonies making the drug trade far more, you know, lucrative and you know, harder to regulate. And then also like there's the element of the dead people are like clones are made of them, right? And are used at, that's the staff
yeah.
at the Zero G Club is like, it's a lot of lookalikes of dead celebrities who have been
yeah.
cloned. And like that feels like the kind of thing of like, I feel like that's what's more, what we're more likely to see is that they're yeah. just like, hey, you know, we can just, we can make an exact clone of Gina Davis. We bought her estate, sold us the rights to clone Gina Davis, and now we have this Gina Davis clone that we can use in ads or whatever. You know, I feel like that stuff is maybe more like, or we'll see an Android version of that.
Yeah,
I don't know why I zeroed in on Gina Davis. She's great.
We love her. We love Gina Davis.
Great in everything
on this show, don't we?
Yeah.
Well, I think that answers the question. Do we like Gina Davis?
Yes. And that it's a resounding
the answer
yes.
is yes. The answer yeah. is yes.
Yeah.
Hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at GetPlayedPod or send us an email at GetPlayedPod@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 6162-PLAY. That is 616-275-2933. Were those weren't the Frozeners, right? I got my fucking vocab. I feel like I should have taken a quiz on this. The Frozeners are a different thing. It's like the
Frozeners are frozen embryos that are then implanted into surrogate parents, but they
yes.
use different kind of blood for space, which is white. I mean, there's so much there. I mean, yeah, we didn't even touch on the Frozeners, who
they're called like,
go ahead.
No, they're called like it's not responders, but it's something like that. There's a term for the clones of the fucking clones. That,
oh, wait,
whatever.
Maybe I wrote it down. Maybe I wrote it yeah. down. Hold on. Maybe I wrote it down. Let's see. In my notes, I have touching the old lady's tits blows up the game. If you blow up the room because of the boobs, you refer to your own death in the sequence. You make out with your daughter. Ooh, Velcro carpet on the moon for low gravity walking was funny because
yes.
it would make so much noise, but they don't touch on that. I thought that would be like a subheading under Velcro carpeting.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I like there's a BBC in this. That's the broadcasting for mm-hmm. Beyond Coast.
Yep. There's babies yep. in vats, biomorts. We didn't talk about biomorts, which are like kind of like proto BBs.
Yes.
Biomorts are the ones who are like corpses, but you keep them alive and then you harvest their organs.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Kenzo Hojo and Hartman's CD-DVD wall, didn't touch on that. Or how Ed came back in Metal Gear Solid 2 with the same voice actor. Oh, man, where is... I don't... Rebirthers.
Rebirthers.
Rebirthers. It is in my notes. It is in my notes. And you just got like a little peek behind the scenes that we don't even get to talk about. All the stuff that we think is interesting about the thing that we're playing.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Our music catching and engineering.
Catching a fly off a woman's breast so that they bounce made me sigh.
This like incredibly accomplished woman. And then she's like, ah, a fly.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's
a part where you're looking through CDs on somebody's shelf, yeah. And it says these are an antique these days, but my dad doesn't like the sound quality online. And I was like, wow, is that prescient? Yeah. It's like the streaming music is going to be a thing, but it's going to be lossy. And so you'll want a better copy of it. Love that. So much to love. So much to not really feel comfortable with.
It's a weird experience. Our music and engineering are by Devin Bryant. You can follow him on Twitter at BaffleGabs. And Matt, as we continue, Hideo Kojember, what's next week's game?
Next week's game, Boktai, the sun is in your hand. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, Bucket.
Edge.
There's no music, only the sound of how cool you are.